for members only. Golf Smarter number 385, published on May 21, 2013.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
An American Caddy in St. Andrews with author Oliver Horovitz.
This is Golf Smarter.
Welcome to Golf Smarter for members only, Oliver.
Hello, thanks for having me.
I'm happy to have you on here. You wrote a book that I found to be so fun, entertaining, and I'm just excited to have you on the show. Where do I begin? Tell me the basis of An American Caddy in St. Andrews.
An American Caddy in St. Andrews is about my seven summers that I've spent caddying on the Old Course in St. Andrews, Scotland.
And that has got to be an exclusive opportunity. How did you nail that?
It's a good question. So I was I went to high school at Stuyvesant High School in New York City. Stuyvesant is, just so you know, it's one of these specialized schools. So it's one of the dorkiest high schools you'll ever find in the entire country. Everyone knew everyone else's GPA to the decimal place.
Yeah, that's an East Coast thing.
Our robotics team was nationally ranked.
And you were the golf nerd?
Yeah, and in the midst of this, I founded the golf team. So
you know, founded it.
I was like the Fonz, as you can imagine.
And then, and they're like going, "Oh, exciting! We get to play video golf." And you're like, "No, with an actual ball."
Part of the deal in Manhattan, we were the only public school in Manhattan that had a golf team. So what that meant was we were either hitting balls at Chelsea Piers, or we were taking the subway up to the Bronx to play golf at Van Cortlandt Park.
Wow.
Ah,
fun. And how big of a team did you create?
We had a lot of spillover from the football team and the basketball team. We had about four kids who could play golf. Actually, our high school matches had a rule in which it wasn't the lowest score won on the hole. It was after seven shots, the person who was closest to the cup won the hole. Yeah,
I like
a little
that.
Embarrassing. But, so anyway, I was on.
But
the,
everybody gets a trophy at the end.
There were a lot of participation ribbons.
Yeah, exactly. And who brought the oranges?
Exactly. So I went to Stuyvesant, and in my senior year, I was on the wait list to get into Harvard. I was
congratulations.
At the time, it was really, really stressful because kids were getting off the wait list and being told they had gotten in. Kids were getting rejected off of it. I heard literally nothing until June. And I was in the middle of my graduation ceremony. And I was actually up on stage playing trumpet because our school band was playing.
Oh, it wasn't as if you were not a super achiever. You also had to be playing trumpet in the school band. Yeah.
I was playing third trumpet, which is kind of like playing Division VII hockey or something.
Right, and you only had two trumpet players. Yeah.
So I was on stage playing trumpet, literally the middle of the graduation ceremony, and my phone rang in the middle of the ceremony. And I looked at it, and it was Sally Champagne, the Harvard admissions officer for the New York region. Sally Champagne kind of sounds like a stripper name, but she was actually an admissions officer.
Yeah, I wasn't going to buy it, actually. Like,
isn't this a porno that you're talking about?
Exactly. Hi, so, this is Sally Champagne.
Yeah, I know.
Like, I'm gonna.
So basically, everyone around me knew that I'd been waiting on this call, and like everyone was like, "Oh my god, she's calling! This is happening." I ran off stage and I went into this kind of side corridor alley, and I took the call.
Wait a minute! You ran off stage during this.
Yep.
You guys
it
were
was
playing.
So not smooth. I like put down my trumpet. It like clanked around in my seat, and I like shuffled out of the auditorium. It must have looked really bad on the audience.
And the band leader probably was pretty upset.
Dr. Wheeler. I was not a big. He was not a big fan of mine that day.
Okay, and, so Ms. Champagne gave you a call,
and I take Ms. Champagne's call. And she says to me, Oliver, I've got great news. You're in. And then I said, oh, my God. And then she said, you're in for next year. And then I was like, what?
You biatch.
I was like, why did you deliver the news in that way? But what had happened was Stuyvesant, my high school, the college office, lost my final semester grades. They misplaced them. And they didn't send them for 2 weeks after they were supposed to send them. And by the and they were, you know, I'd killed myself that spring because I knew I had to get good grades if I was getting off this wait list. And Harvard didn't get the grades in time, filled up their class of 2007, and then said to me, "You're the first kid accepted for the class of 2008. And I thus was given, I guess you'd call it a deferred admission. So I had to take a gap year, which is kind of a euphemism for killing 365 consecutive days.
Yeah, and not somebody who's motivated to get to Harvard is prepared to do.
Well, you're totally right. I mean, at the time, I was kind of bummed out because all of my a lot of kids from Stuyvesant were going there. I had about 20 friends I knew who were going to be there the year after.
Yeah.
So at the time, I was like,
and those kids were so smart that if you waited 1 year, by the time you got there, they'd already graduated.
They were going to be president already by the time I got there. So I was like, what am I going to do for this year? You know, if I take a year off and really just do nothing for a year, I'm going to get to Harvard. I'm going to flunk out. And I had this idea. So I had already applied to University of St. Andrews back earlier in the year as a safety, as like a lark in a way. And I knew about St. Andrews because my mom is actually English. And we've got a great uncle who lived in St. Andrews, who'd been living there for 50 years, named Ken Hayward. And I always knew him as this funny old English guy who wore a tweed coat and tweed tie every single day, even when he was in his garden. And, you know, we'd come over there for, you know, a visit once or twice a year to, quote unquote, see Uncle Ken, but really just to go play golf.
When did you start playing golf?
I started when I was 9.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. I remember I saw the Masters on TV. I flipped through and, ooh, what's this beautiful green space? And who's this Australian dude named Greg Norman playing?
Hmm.
And he became my favorite player. And I turned to my dad that day and I said, we should try this thing. So my dad, dad was 55 at the time. And so I was 9, he was 55. And we started playing golf that summer. So anyway, I've been playing at this point. I've been playing for 9 years. I was playing off a 1.8. I was playing a lot of golf.
Very good.
I was, you know, sort of at the point where I was like, you know, this is a good opportunity for me for a year to see how good I can get and see if there is any way to actually give this a shot of playing professionally. I mean, when I was 14, 15, Fred, I that was my dream in life, was to be a golf pro.
Well, let's see. You've already proven that you're a overachiever by a 1.8. Stuyvesant, you know, an elite high school,
yeah.
Getting accepted to Harvard. Yeah. So I'm sure that you were very comfortable setting very high goals for yourself and probably pressuring yourself way too much.
For sure. I mean, I should say one thing about Stuyvesant. You have to take a test to get in, and 24,000 kids take a test and 800 get in.
Wow.
Just on one exam. I made it by 1 point.
Wow.
And each question is worth like 7 points, so I don't even understand how that was possible. So I was literally number 799 or 800 accepted. So I was very used to squeaking into things like on the skin of my teeth. So Harvard, the waitlist thing didn't surprise me much. So I was like, you know what? St. Andrews has this freshman year abroad program, and you can sort of go there and do your first year and then leave. And you don't get credit. And the deal with Harvard was you can do anything you want for a year, but you cannot enroll in a four-year program. And so I guess the loophole was because I could just do freshman year at St. Andrews. The deal was I couldn't transfer any credit from my gap year back to Harvard. I'd have to start as a freshman. And I sort of like complained about that for a second. And Sally Champagne was like, well, you know, if you wanted to, you could reapply right now as a transfer, but you'd have to give up your spot now. And I was like, No.
And because in your mind, you're going, I have to repeat 13th grade?
Totally.
Yeah. I flunked. Oh, I'm a miserable failure.
I mean, I'm at this point 17 years old, and I've been, you know, just killing myself academically for 4 years in this really huge pressure cooker. And I was just completely about, you know, getting there and getting started. But this gap year seemed cool from the get-go as well. I did a little research to St. Andrews. I discovered a couple things pretty quickly, like that night. First of all, Prince William was a junior at St. Andrews when I was going to be going there. I knew that because he was there, female applications had risen significantly to St. Andrews. My year, Fred, I think it was 65-35 girl-to-guy ratio.
Sign him up.
Correct. I also knew, importantly, that the drinking age in St. Andrews and in the UK was 18. And by 18, I mean a very loosely enforced 18. They're often kids you see in the bars that are like maximum 15. And St. Andrews is, you know, it's this very quirky little town with only three streets and 31 pubs in this little town. It's
really?
Got more pubs per capita than anywhere else in the entire United Kingdom.
Wow.
So the thing that sealed the deal was the golf. And here's why. When you're a student at University of St. Andrews, you get to play unlimited on the old course and the other, at the time, five other courses for the entire year for £103. Now, that's $200.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. I have a lot of golfers that I caddy for who are 70 to 80 years old who ask that it's too late for them to apply as grad students.
Okay, then I don't have to ask.
It's done. I'll come over and write your recommendation.
Thank you. For the kid who flunked out after his first year.
So I knew it was going to be a good year, and I knew that this was something that was going to be fun. So I called them up. They said I could do it. I called Harvard. They said, yep, you can apply, and you can go. You can enroll. And I shipped out, and I started that September.
Awesome.
Yeah. Now, as soon as I got to St. Andrews, there was a couple other surprises. I guess in retrospect, it shouldn't be a surprise, but every single person, it seemed like, at St. Andrews in the university played golf, including very, very cute girls.
Oh.
Everyone played golf. Now, it's almost as if it was a parallel inverted universe, because the golf team at St. Andrews was the coolest team in the entire school. It was like the football team anywhere else.
Wow. You are not in America anymore, my friend.
The other kids were all English, like Northern English, Scottish, total party animals. They were basically out of the movie Animal House.
Wow.
There was no, it's a very differently run team than in American schools. There's no adult supervision. There's no coach. We met once a week in a pub called the Gin House. And when I was there, there were 25 kids on the golf team, Fred, with a 2 handicap or better.
Oh.
Yeah. Crazy.
That's some serious competition.
And we're talking like a 2 handicap, like in Scotland, okay?
Yeah, right.
I once had a match against a kid who was, I knew he was a one, it was like a visiting match, and I knew he was a 1 handicap and I had to play him. And then on the first tee, I was like, where are you a 1 at, by the way? And he's like, oh, at Carnoustie. Yeah.
Oh, yes.
I think I lost about, I think I was 8-7. I got beaten.
Mm.
Yeah. If that.
Mm.
So these kids were amazing. And golf was kind of like, in a weird way, it was the currency with which you got respect in the school. It was completely weird. And so for the first time in my entire life, my playing golf was like a cool thing. And I thought, I found the right place for me. This is good.
This is going to be good. And then you're starting to go, I'm only here for a year.
Exactly. Yeah. And the year rolled through, and there are all these amazing traditions at St. Andrews. There's something called the May Dip. Because, by the way, the university is 600 years old. It turns 600 this year.
Wow.
And there are all these old, old, old traditions. And one of them is the May Dip. It takes place on May 1st. In which the entire school, all 7,000 students, stay up all night, go into parties, and then they, at 5 in the morning, charge into the North Sea completely naked.
And you're talking about those cute golfing girls, too.
Yes. It's not like the people you don't want to see. It's a lot of the people that you really are praying to God every day that you're going to see.
Now, is this something that it's just for students, or do alumni fight to come back?
They do not come back for that. I've definitely seen some older people taking pictures on the beach, which is not totally kosher, but what are you going to do?
Yeah, right.
I'll probably do the same thing when I'm 70.
Yeah. You don't have to. You've got the memories. You've got the whole album of photographs in your head.
Totally. So yeah. So imagine this, like every day there's something new like this going on and you're amongst kids from all over the world. And I was 17. I'd never been, you know, abroad by myself before. And I'm suddenly in a class in which it'll be 10 people in this international relations class. There'll be a kid from Germany, France, Sweden, England, Spain, maybe Canada, and I'll be like the only American in the class. It was wonderful. Mm-hmm. And I just had the best year of my life. I had my first serious girlfriend. I did my first serious drinking. I missed 5 days of golf the entire year.
And that's probably because of the girlfriend, right?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Right. And then the end of the year came around and I thought, you know, I'm not ready to leave paradise yet. And so I thought about what I could do for the summer. And at the golf team, at one of the meetings, the kids were telling me that a lot of golf team guys stayed over in the summer and they caddied on the old course. And they said, if you do it, you can make 50 pounds a round. I remember the exchange rate was so bad back in 2004 that I think it was 2-1. So you make $100 a round. If on a good day, you get 2 rounds a day. And they told me all of the hilarious stories about, you know, the gruff old Scottish caddies. So I thought to myself, yeah, this sounds like a great summer job. This is perfect. So I pushed back my flights. I found a place to live over the summer. And I went down to the shack and I enrolled in the official Old Course trainee caddy program. Now, when you're a trainee caddy, the way to get into the program, it seems like it would be easier to get like a PhD. It takes so long. You have to, first of all, do a week in-house in which they give you all of these ridiculous like hours and hours of instruction, covering everything. After this week, you then have to be a shadow caddy in which you have to follow professional older veteran caddies around the course and quote unquote, I guess, pick up tricks of the trade from them. Then you become a trainee caddy in which you have to do 30 assessed rounds in which you get paid a lot less money. You have a humiliatingly huge badge on your caddy bib, which says trainee caddy.
Mm. The scarlet letter.
Yeah, it's like saying, hey, pay me less money. And the worst thing, this is...
It also says, hey, if I make a mistake, I'm sorry, but I'm new at this.
Exactly. And then you have to stand by the window as Rick McKenzie, who I'll tell you about later, our Stalin-esque caddy master, as he told our golfer right in front of us. Now, just so you know, Oliver is a trainee caddy, as if, like, if I screw up, it's not his fault. So you work through the round because, you know, you want to get as much money as you can. So you work it really hard throughout the round. You kind of try to overcome your trainee status for your golfer. And then at the end of the round, what do you have to do, Fred? You have to give your golfer a report card for them to fill out right before you get paid.
Oh.
Yeah, it's really, really bad.
God, an employee evaluation every 4 hours?
Yep, yep. And then you have to hand that over to Rick. Now, once you do 30 of these assessed rounds, then you take a test, and it's a written exam. And on this written exam, you have to name a lot of the names of the 112 bunkers on the course. You have to sketch breaks in a lot of the greens. They have like a little diagram you have to fill in. You gotta do all this. If you pass the test, if you get good feedback on your rounds, if the shadow caddying went fine, if all of this was successful, then Rick might take you on, maybe.
And this is not easy for a kid who's probably really good at tests. And you're like, this is more pressure than you've had before.
Totally, totally. So, you know, in retrospect, I showed up, I was 18 at this point. I was 18, American, a trainee caddy, a student. I had nothing going for me. I was like the lowest of the low.
But you're thinking, I'm good. I'm, you know, I've got a good score. I know the game. I've been playing most of my life.
Totally. At the time, I thought, oh, they're going to love me. This is great. You know, I'm a good golfer. I'm going to waltz in here, and I'm going to win over the shack. This is great. So I remember my first round as a shadow caddy. This is really, I'm never going to forget this round. Had a guy named Kenny, who I was shadowing, a veteran caddy. He had such a strong Scottish accent that I think other Scottish caddies couldn't understand what the hell he was saying. And Kenny's got three American women in his group, and they're all from New York City. And they realize I'm from New York, and I don't know, I guess they think that's like really cute or whatever. So they're chatting to me before the round by the first tee, and Kenny's looking on, seems to be smiling. And I'm thinking to myself, you know what? This is good. My caddy career is off to a good start here.
Mm-hmm.
We're walking to the first tee. Kenny grabs me aside, and he shoves me up right in front of his face, and he points to his mouth, and he goes, "You see this?" And I go, "Yeah." And he goes, "Shut it."
Ouch.
Oh. Day one of my caddy career.
Yikes.
And Fred, this was pretty much the way it went for the first month. Every single day, I was like in danger.
And at what point are you going, I've got a book here?
Yeah. I mean, well, that's later down the road. At this point, I'm thinking, why the hell did I sign up for this? Like, yeah. I don't need this.
Hey, ho, language. Whoa. Whoa. No, that's all right. We'll bleep that.
Sorry about that. I don't need this hassle.
Yeah.
I could be back in America with my friends. I could be, I'm starting Harvard in the fall. Like, this is what I've been waiting for. What am I doing taking this from all of the caddies? So the first month, you really are thrown to the wolves as a trainee caddy. Mm. There are so many things, Fred, they don't tell you about caddying. There are these unwritten rules, and I knew none of them. And some of them are like, don't correct your caddy, another caddy in your group in front of the other players. Just don't do that.
Yeah. Yeah, I could. Yeah. And you should carry it along with girls too. Don't.
Yes, exactly. These are a lot of good life lessons.
Yeah, exactly. Right? Exactly. Pretend that caddy's your girlfriend. Never. Yeah. Okay.
No, the caddy bib doesn't make you look fat.
How's my butt?
So, I couldn't do anything right for the first month.
No.
And, I was 18. I was very talkative. And I was, I was showing.
You're a New Yorker. What do you mean? Very. Of course you're.
I'm a New Yorker.
Yeah. How you doing?
It was just every day I was getting screamed at and threatened. And it was bad. And here's the deal. In the caddy shack, there's a real hierarchy. At the very top, you've got your like old, kind of veteran guys who've been there forever. The kind of grandfathers of the shack.
And what kind of age are you talking about, these old veteran guys?
70.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah. We got a 76-year-old caddy right now.
And he's carrying two bags simultaneously through an entire...
No. Well, here's the thing. You're actually not allowed to ever do doubles on two shows. Yeah, you always do one bag around.
So you can have four caddies going out as well?
Oh, it's crazy. It's always four caddies and four golfers, plus some of the golfers' wives or whatnot. It's huge groups. It's about 10 or 12 people usually in the group.
So you bring your own gallery with you.
For sure. I was once with a Chinese group that had translators for each golfer, assistants for each golfer, and then a few like tour people. So there was about 20 of us in the group.
Okay, so I got to have on a group like that. How are your tips?
I mean, at that point, the tip is irrelevant. You're just worried about the other translators not being hit by other golf balls. So you've got your really old guys who they're 70, Fred, but they look like 95. Mm. A lot of years of smoking and drinking Guinness and standing against the North Sea.
Right.
It doesn't do a lot for your skin tone.
Yeah, I was thinking they're probably weather beaten. Yeah.
And what's amazing is I go back and so guys that I've haven't seen in a whole year, they've aged so much when I get back sometimes.
The younger guys.
Yeah, even the guys who are 30 or 40. And you're out there in the sun and the elements every single day. Mm. But we say that there's no better place to be ever on a really nice day when you're out on the course. And there is no worse place to be when it's a monsoon coming down and we have to show up. But so at the very top, you got the old guys. Then you've got your 40 to 50-year-old veterans who are really kind of the serious professional caddies. These guys loop on tour a lot. They've done tons of British Opens. They've done tons of women's open events. They're good. They know their stuff. I'd say a notch below that, you have your university kids who have done a couple years already, who kind of, they've achieved their decent level of cockiness already. And then at the bottom, you've got your trainees, and we're just the scum of the earth. It's bad. Other caddies won't even talk to you when you're a trainee sometimes. You can be the nicest guy ever. You can be a really good golfer. You can be, you don't even have to be young. You can be 50 years old. But if you're a trainee, it's like, again, the scarlet letter is on your chest. And so my big thing was I gotta get rid of the trainee caddy thing. Like, I hate this. Like, I need to get promoted here. So I went into caddy overdrive, and I did as many rounds as I could. And one way to get respect in the shack is to do a lot of rounds. If you do two rounds in a day, it's called a double. You do a double. If you do a quick double with no pause in between, it's called a turn and burn. You come in, you go straight out again. Mm. Our caddy master, Rick McKenzie, was famous for being right on the 18th green, perched there. And as soon as we got there, he would point at us and then scowl and then point right to the first tee. There was no way you were going to say no to that. You were going straight out again.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. And unfortunately, this always happens when it's like the worst weather. When other caddies do slink away, you are doing a double for sure. Fred, you can also do a treble, three rounds in a day. This is a mistake.
Well, yeah, it's got to be exhausting. And what time are you starting in the morning, and when are you working till?
Oh, God. You're starting whenever it's first come, first serve. This policy changed a few years ago. But certainly when I was doing my first 4 years of caddying, it's first come, first serve. Mm-hmm. You would show up as early as you could. Back in the day, caddies would go straight from the pubs when they shut at 2 a.m. right down to the shack and sleep on the benches. This still sort of happens a little bit. One time I showed up at 3:45 a.m. and I was number 7. I was like, what do I have to do to win?
Yeah, it's trying to like get around at Torrey Pines down in San Diego.
Or like Bethpage, exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's funny because golfers are doing the same thing. Golfers are lining up at maybe 5, and they're complaining about that. And then at that point, I've already been there for like an hour and a half.
Right. Now, can you get an advanced tee time at St. Andrews? I've never played there, and I've never played there. So can you book in advance, or is it first come, first serve on that too?
It's interesting. There's one day, I think it already happened. I think it might even be the first day of the year, just January 1st. The ballot opens up, and people instantly jump on the website or call in and reserve a year in advance.
You can do that?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
There's a couple things that people don't really know you can do. But that's if you want to play in a four ball with three of your buddies, you're going to probably have to do that. That's your first kind of port of call. Let's do a year in advance. Mm. After that, there's a bunch of other ways to get on. You can do this thing called the Old Course Experience, which is a tour company. It's very expensive. But the big, big thing, the feather in their hat, is you get a guaranteed round on the Old Course. Mm. You can also ballot, which is showing up maybe the week you're playing and entering in the ballot 2 days before. I think it's like maybe a 50% chance you'll get on, or a 30% chance. And then the other way to do it is to show up morning of and wake up as early as you possibly can and then get on as a casual. There's so many ways to get on.
So knowing you doesn't help me.
Actually does help a little bit because I get points.
Yeah,
so we can talk about this after the show. I do need a new set of Titleist irons. I can give you my fitting size.
You're talking to the wrong man.
So the golfers you're caddying for, a lot of them are they're so happy to be on the course because a lot of them either showed up, you know, waited 7 hours to get on, or they came over and they've been balloting every day and they got on like on their final day. So a lot of guys are really, really just in little kids in a candy store when they're out on the course.
So you did this the first summer after your gap year where you went to university there.
Yeah.
And then you had to go back to Harvard. And you started your Harvard career, or did you stay?
Well, here's what happened. I mean, throughout the summer, I was working so hard, and I was kind of picking up all the tips of what you got to do, which is basically be quiet when you're a trainee. And midway through the summer, there was this great moment where Rick McKenzie, our caddy master, called me to the window, and I had no idea what was going on. I thought I was in trouble, because I often was with him. And without saying anything, he pulled me up to him. And again, I thought I was about to maybe get into a fight or something. And he removed my trainee badge and put in an official Old Course caddy badge.
Oh, did you call your mom?
I was so happy. That was one of the proudest moments of my 18 years of life, I can tell you.
Wow.
I was so pumped. And all of the trainees were right around me, the other trainees by the bench, and they were all like clapping me on the back. My best friends were there, and they were all giving me high fives. And I was like, you know what? This is pretty cool. I did this myself. Like no one else pulled any strings. Nothing happened. I had to do this completely on my own. And it felt good. It felt really good. And as soon as here's the embarrassing thing. As soon as I became an official caddy, Fred, I started being in the shack and just saying, oh, these trainee caddies, they're so annoying. There are way too many trainee caddies. Oh, this is just the worst. The cycle just completely turned as well. And the thing, by the way, actually came completely full circle this past summer on my seventh season.
So you kept going back every year.
Oh, yeah. We'll get to that. But this past summer, Fred, the caddy master, the new guy, Robert Thorpe, called me to the window and said, hey, Oliver, can you take a shadow caddy today? Can you have someone follow you around? Is that okay? And show them how to do it? And I looked to my left, and there was a 17-year-old Scottish kid who couldn't have reminded me any more of myself.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, sure. Yeah,
I'll abuse him. Sure.
Yeah, exactly. I'll treat him like crap. So by the end of the first summer, I'd finally won a little respect. I mean, and by winning respect, I mean I was getting screamed at a little bit less. But I knew I loved it. I knew I'd stumbled upon this kind of amazing world that I was, you know, I was the only American kid there. And I was really falling in love with it. And then as soon as that happened, it was time to head back and start at Harvard. And I have to say, I had really mixed feelings when I got back, because this was something that I'd worked so hard in high school to try to get into Harvard. And this was something that I, you know, it was the motivating thing for me. So many Saturday nights where I would, you know, study that extra couple hours of like whatever AP US history or something. I waited so long to get there. And as soon as I got to Harvard, the first thing I said was, I want to go back to St. Andrews now. Because suddenly every kid was 18 or 17. Every kid was talking about their SAT scores from the year before. It was very cold in Boston very quickly. And I missed all of my friends and I missed all the caddies. And so that first year, I actually went back twice to Scotland.
Gotta go see Uncle Ken.
I know. I went back in December and I went back in my spring break was spring break straight in St. Andrews. How cool is that?
Yeah. It's all
exactly,
cool.
Not exactly Miami.
Yeah.
So, you know, it wasn't even a doubt that I was going back the next year. Like I was going back to caddy for sure that summer.
Amazing.
And when I got back, it just felt like I'd come back home when I first got back in June that second summer. Now there's a thing that's kind of cool about the Old Course. Lots of things are cool, but the one thing that I love is that the Old Course goes straight out and straight back. And what this means is the front nine, you're basically playing straight away in the same direction. And you play out to what's called the Eden Estuary, which is the body of water. You hit it on about the 11th hole. And then you turn around and you go straight back in on yourself. So you come back in on your left. Now, this means that you always have a fairway to your left. And almost every fairway is a double fairway. And almost every green, except for four greens on the Old Course, are all double greens. Big shared greens. No one knows this until you get there. Except for four greens, every single one is shared. The fifth green, by the way, the shared fifth and 13th is from front to back 100 yards.
Oh my.
Oh yeah. An acre and a half.
But you have to putt?
Oh yeah. Now you can hit 17 greens on the old course or 18 greens on the old course in regulation, and it will mean absolutely nothing. Because you'll have like 17 three putts. But oh yeah, you got a putt. I mean, I've had people take their three woods out and do like almost a half swing just to reach it. Oh yeah.
Amazing.
So, and don't forget, like you can have an 80 yard putt. That's a 240 foot putt. That's pretty crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the really amazing thing about all the shared greens and all the shared fairways when you're caddying is on every single hole, you pass your fellow caddies. You pass them in the fairways and you pass them on the greens. And you always say what's up to each other. And you know, you do your high five, you do a little caddy dance, whatever. But for me, when I got back that first day that I was caddying again, the second summer, I'm never going to forget it. That entire first trip around the old course, on every fairway and every green, I saw all of the other caddies. And they all kind of like rubbed their eyes and looked at me as if like they didn't believe I was back. And then all of them waved and smiled.
Oh, great.
How cool is that?
That's awesome.
That's the coolest welcoming ceremony I could ever hope to have.
Sure.
Of all time. And you know what? This was a tradition that sort of just, it repeated every single summer. That last, the last round I did every summer before I went back, everyone knew I was about to leave. You know, they knew my flight was the next day, and it was like saying goodbye and then hello to, you know, to all my friends. It was pretty great.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing. So are you done with this? Are you not going back anymore?
Here's the thing. Every summer, I always say this is my last summer.
And you worked last summer?
Oh yeah.
Oh man. So now, you don't know?
Yeah, I don't know. I know for sure I'm going back in June. I'm going to be back in St. Andrews the entire month of June. Mm. And what I did the last couple of years was I would be caddying in the morning. Maybe I'd start caddying at 8 or 9 in the morning. And I'd wake up at like 5 in the morning and I'd go write the book. And then I'd go caddy. And then after I did a round, I'd go back to the University of St. Andrews library and I'd keep writing. Mm. And for me, I got to say, like, I don't think I could have written the book from New York City, like staring out into like a building in Manhattan. This was something that I really had to be in St. Andrews to do and sort of like look out my window, you know, onto the golf course.
What gave you the idea that you needed to write a book?
Well, I'd written, the second summer, I wrote a couple articles. I wrote one for Sports Illustrated.
Nice.
about that first summer of caddying. And I wrote one in Golf World. And they both came out the same week. They came out the week the British Open was there in 05. Uh-huh. And I remember being just terrified when they came out. I was like,
why?
I'm about to get fired.
Oh, sure.
I'm about
they
to get
didn't know you were doing
town.
This.
I'm about to get attacked with pointed sticks. Like, this could be bad. And it came out, and I like went down to the shack that first. And, you know, my caddy master, Rick McKenzie, hated it. Like, I got screamed at by him. But the other caddies and the ones that I really, you know, that I was worried about, they looked at me and they're like, Horovitz, that was hilarious. That was great.
Oh, great.
And so I guess that was sort of like in the back of my mind, I was like, that's cool. That's cool that they're letting me share the story and they're not angry about it. I mean, the shack is very insular. This is a place that if you just wandered down and tried to talk with some of the caddies, strike up a conversation, like it might not happen. They're pretty closed off. And I think for me to have gotten into their world and to sort of become accepted, the main thing was, I think, the golf, that I played golf and they knew I was a golfer. That actually won me some currency there in the shack.
Yeah.
And the other thing was that I had going for me was Uncle Ken.
They knew him?
They knew him. Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Now, Uncle Ken was, he came there originally to be stationed there in the Royal Air Force during World War II. And he married a girl there. He met a girl, never left, settled down, married her. She passed away a few years later. He married another girl, or I guess she, at that point she might have been 50, so she was a woman, and he outlived her as well. And so he lived in this huge Victorian mansion by himself in the middle of town on Hope Street. Interestingly, this is right across the street from Prince William. So every single day they go out of their houses, look at each other, and go, "Hey, what's up?" And Uncle Ken was
Uncle Ken's going, "Hey, what's up?" to a prince.
Literally, they're walking across the street and funny. Like doing the head nod. It was so funny to see,
dude,
looking good, William, looking good,
Willie. What's up, Willie?
Keep the hair. In 10 years' time, William, your brother is going to dress as a Nazi for Halloween. That's a really bad idea. Don't let him do that.
Yeah, right.
This actually happened. So Uncle Ken was, in later life, he was a town councilor in St. Andrews during the 60s and the 70s. And this meant that he knew every single person over the age of like 82 years old. Uncle Ken was the president of the Gardeners Club, the president of the Caravan Club, and could tell you every single thing about St. Andrews. So he was really a funny old fixture in the town. And everyone loved him. And he had this giggle that was kind of like a hee-hee-hee-hee. And every single person in the town knows the giggle and remembers it and makes him smile.
Oh, man.
So the caddies knew that I was Uncle Ken's great nephew. I think that helped.
That had to help. So listen, I don't want you to tell the entire book. I would like people to get it because this has been so entertaining. You can imagine how good the book is. But the subtitle of the book is Growing Up, Girls, and Looping on the Old Course. All right, we've covered two out of three. Briefly, why girls and what do you got?
Okay, so second season I get back. I discover something pretty cool. At this point, the coolest thing I'd ever heard of in my life. There's a rival business that has started up in St. Andrews that is in its infancy when I get there in the second year. It's called model caddying. What it is two university girls have started a caddy business in which there are about 25 university girls, university students, all of them with modeling experience who are going to be caddying in Scotland.
And all of them are golfers too?
None of them are golfers.
Ah, so they're not from the St. Andrews University.
They are all from St. Andrews, but I guess none of them even had been on a golf course before. They were like the 25 exceptions.
Okay.
Sure. And if they knew golf, none of them had ever caddied before. So at this point, they had no way to – they needed someone to train them. They needed someone to like advise them and everything. And I got introduced to them like my first night back in St. Andrews. And I'm talking to these three girls who are about 25,000 leagues above me. Like I would never be able to talk to these girls otherwise. And it comes up that I'm a caddy. I get introduced to them as a caddy. And this girl, Julia, just who's the, I guess, sort of the setting the whole thing up, goes, "Oh my God, that's so cool that you're a caddy." And never in my life have I been told that caddying is cool. So I did, Fred, what I think any 19-year-old caddy would do in that situation. I became their secret trainer.
Oh,
now
very good.
Now this was I think a good move on my part, but it was a dangerous move because the old course caddies hated the model caddies.
Oh, I bet they were not thrilled about this idea at all.
Hated them. So jealous, threatened by them. And the whole town is so traditional and insular that the town hated them as well. So this caused a huge controversy. So every time I was walking down the street, I was in the shack, I was in the supermarket, I was hearing just put downs of the model caddies. And I was hearing, just like insults every day. And I had to play along with it when I was in the shack. I had to be like, "Oh yeah, oh God, that's so stupid. They think they can caddy." But every night I was going onto the Jubilee course, which is like a course right next to the old, at night, and I was training model caddies.
And riding home, telling this your friends.
If the first summer was the best summer of my life.
You got pictures of that in the book? Wait a minute.
We do have a picture.
Wait a minute. What page is that on? I want to see these model caddies. Where are they? Oh,
sort of the middle of the book.
Right,
I'm opening
middle.
It too.
Okay, and there's a young training caddy, sunburn in the shack. Rick McKenzie, a good old Rick. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I'm not seeing any model caddies.
Keep going. One more page. Two more pages.
There's people sleeping on the fairway. There's hello.
Oh yeah.
Oh hello. Yeah. All right. So listen, you got to get the book for yourself, folks, because I'm not sharing this copy. Oh, they are beautiful girls.
Oh, yeah.
And clearly they're models. I mean, they are styling here. They're striking a pose.
They are doing blue steel.
Oh, that's great. That is hilarious.
And this became a huge thing, huge part of my summer, and became increasingly dangerous every single day for me to be involved in this. And I'm not going to tell you how it played out, but it did become a little too dramatic for what I wanted that summer.
Yeah, it always does. It always does. Hopefully you have some sort of memory and you can not get yourself in much more trouble than you did at that time.
And well, you want to know something, Fred? I think I think to this day, most of the caddies did not know that I was the trainer. They knew there was an anonymous trainer. This will be one of the things that I think a lot of people are going to find out
in the book. Oh, wow. That's great. So then you may not want to go back next summer.
I might bring a bodyguard when I go back.
Yeah,
no,
right,
no,
exactly.
I can't wait to get back.
Oh, that's great. Well, again, the book is called An American Caddy in St. Andrews, Growing Up, Girls, and Looping on the Old Course by our guest, Oliver Horovitz. A young, ambitious man who, you know, when you're done caddying and you're not going to have a professional golf career, what are you going to do, man?
I don't know, maybe some exotic dancing.
Okay, well, you can call the models back and they'll train you. What do you think? Good idea? Huh?
I love it. We should go on tour together. That's great.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. Speaking of tours here in the United States, you were alluding to something. Can you share it with us?
Absolutely. It'd be my pleasure. So this summer, I'm doing a tour of different golf clubs around the country, going to tons of different golf clubs, and we're doing an evening I'm calling A Taste of Scotland. So it's basically an hour of my best caddy stories, telling everyone about my experiences growing up amongst all the old Scottish guys. And more importantly, I'm giving everyone insider advice for planning a golf trip to Scotland. So like where you should stay, where you should play, kind of all the cool stuff I've picked up. And we're combining it with a Scotch tasting.
Aha!
To give it a real authentic Scottish feel.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. And where are you doing these talks?
We're going to be on the West Coast near San Francisco. I'm going to be all over the Northeast. We're looking at some places in the Midwest as well, in Tennessee. So basically, if you want me to come to your golf club, get in contact, and we might be able to make it happen.
Perfect. Well, there's a couple ways you can go ahead and click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarter.com. If you want to send me an email, I can forward it off to Oliver. And check out his book, please. And you may want to have him at your golf course. He'd be happy to come out there and tell you more stories. The book is available on the Golfers Mart at golfsmarter.com in our Amazon section, our book section. So if you want to pick up the book, please, you can get the Kindle version or the hard copy version. Oliver, I wish you the best of luck in everything that you do, man. This is a great start for you and a very entertaining book. I highly recommend it. Thanks so much for spending this time with us.
My pleasure, Fred. And if you ever need a caddy, you know where to turn.
And I just checked our Golfers Mart book page to see that the book has been selling very well and has received a tremendous amount of great ratings. Congratulations, Oliver. That's great. Up next, we'll check out the Back 9 Network. That's back9network.com. Have you heard about it yet? Well, you're going to. At least you will next week, because we're going to have the CEO, Jamie Bosworth, on the show. Back 9 Network right now is a golf lifestyle website that is soon going to be a full-fledged golf television channel, right? So it's not going to be competing with the Golf Channel in the sense that it's just tournament and play, play, play. It's golf lifestyle, which pretty much is what we do here at Golf Smarter. So it's really a fun conversation with Jamie Bosworth. Great guy. And I hope you enjoy it as well. And I would love to get your feedback on it. And anytime, if you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, just click on that Hey Fred button at golfsmarter.com.
Smarterpodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.